You're listening to How To 20-Something, the only podcast that helps both men and women navigate their 20s and learn how to adult across all aspects of their lives. We're going to be focusing on career, relationships, finances, fitness, nutrition, and all of the common challenges and obstacles a typical 20-something will face in this post-college life and what to do about it. I'm your host, Jess Diamond, and I am the CEO and founder of Jess Diamond Coaching, where I help young professionals get their shit together, gain their confidence, and own their life. No one prepares you for this adulting world, so allow me to help you feel like you are no longer a chicken running around with its head cut off, and that you actually know what the hell is going on and what your next step to take is. Welcome to How To 20-Something. Welcome back to How To 20-Something. If it wasn't obvious based on the title, today's episode is all about how to eat and train like a bodybuilder. I want to preface this episode by saying this is not only for people who want to step on a stage, but just additional knowledge for how you can manipulate your body using different tools that lead you to a physique you are proud of. And I want to help you feel more confident in what you see in the mirror in very healthy and sustainable ways, because liking the way you look will help you show up in every area of your life so much better, so you can move on to reach your full potential. I even have a free resource for you to download, and it is linked in the show notes, or you can always just head to justdiamondcoaching.com/confidence, but it is a PDF that will be sent to your email that gives you my top 3 tricks to walking into any room with confidence, so you stop hiding out from experiences because you feel insecure or awkward or uncomfortable. So go download that and keep it in your back pocket for the next time your social anxiety wants to take over your brain and talk you out of going to something new. Now, the other week, I brought on a guest and we discussed the effects of eating in a surplus versus a deficit. So think of this episode as more of an extreme and dialed in approach for when you want to take things to the next level. But also please know that unless you know the ins and outs of the bodybuilding world, you should be working with a coach who specializes in this exact thing, like Dee, who is the guest for today. So I've brought on a pro bodybuilder to share her knowledge and expertise and experience around this subject, because I also don't know what it's like to be a bodybuilder, but I do admire the grit and discipline and the art of the sport. So we're going to discuss Dee's personal journey, the different phases you go through to get show ready, as well as post-show, warning signs to look out for, supplements that everyone should be consuming, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And before we get into all of that, I want to introduce Dee to the show so you guys know a bit of her background. Dee Jackson is a certified personal trainer, online personal trainer, strength and conditioning coach, competition prep coach, and a certified weight management consultant. She is a professional athlete through the IFBB International Federation of Bodybuilders, an IFBB Olympian in 2023. She is the oldest Olympian to compete in the Olympia. She is a Masters Olympian 2023. She's the only competitor to win 3 classes in a single competition. She is the first and oldest American and African American to win the Arnold Classic Master overall. She's a fitness model, public speaker, educator, and fitness enthusiast. Dee is the founder of Fit Nation and created this company to be more than just workout plans. She assists clients in developing a healthy lifestyle by teaching and encouraging them every step of the way until they accomplish their goals. Dee was born on May 31st, 1970, and discovered that the fountain of youth is found in regular exercise and good nutrition. Dee says getting healthy changed her life in so many ways, and she wants to share her success with others and motivate those who have the aspiration to become a better, stronger version of themselves. Oh my goodness. Those are so many incredible accolades, and I'm so excited to bring you onto How To 20-Something. So hi, Dee, and thanks for taking the time to record this episode.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so excited to be able to talk to this group of people, the 20 plus, how important nutrition is. And if they decide that they want to get that, like you said, taking it to the next level. Yeah, let's talk about it and what you need to do to get there.
Yeah, I'm so excited to dive into these conversations. So you've done several shows before. Can you share some of what you've personally experienced by going through this process and maybe some lessons you've learned along the way for someone just starting out?
Yeah, I actually started bodybuilding when I was 44. I had no clue what I was doing. I didn't. But like so many people online, I wanted to take my physique to the next level. My first priority, I wanted to get healthy. I was having some medical problems, so I used bodybuilding as a mechanism to get healthy and stay healthy. So, you know, when I first started bodybuilding, I thought, oh, you just go to the gym, eat good, buy a suit, and get on stage. And that was a mistake. I didn't do my homework. I had a great street body, but a street body and a competition body is not the same thing. So, you know, I thought I was all that, got this great physique for the street. And I go to my first bodybuilding competition and I did win.
Oh.
And I won the overall. But I tell my friends, but it was the little hood show. You know, it's a little show, you know, so I win. Like when my clients come to me and they're like, well, I won the overall. I'm like, let me see the lineup. Let me see who you win against. So the lineup wasn't that great. Okay. So I won. And then I went to another smaller show, did pretty good in that show. And again, I didn't do my homework and I stepped on the national stage and I wasn't ready. Because I didn't do my homework and I took the sport for granted. It's so much more than what people thought. You know, I went backstage. It's like, okay, clearly you're not ready. Have a good time. So the lesson that I learned in the very beginning is that not to take it for granted and to do my homework before I step on a stage like that. And it was kind of arrogant on my part of all the people who have put so much into it. And I just was like, okay, I look good. I'm just going to step on stage. So the biggest lesson I learned from the beginning was it's more to it than just having a great physique. It's more to it than that. So we have to define having a great street body and a bodybuilding body is not the same thing. It's not.
So what happened between your first national competition and your second one?
Okay, so my first national competition, I was in the last call out. So I was upset about that because I'm pretty competitive. And this time I decided to listen to my coaches. Like, hey, you know, you got to do A, B, and C. And I did my homework and I went online and I became a student. I really did. I started studying bodybuilders that were winning, why they were winning, why their physiques looked the way that they looked. But the biggest lesson that I learned is that it wasn't just about the gym. I could run, I worked out, I had a coach 3 days a week. I didn't realize how important the nutrition was. So during that learning phase, I had to discipline with my eating, eat more frequently, eat extremely clean in order to get that lean physique that was for stage and not for street. So when I stepped on the national stage the second time, I was in the top five.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't win my pro card that time, but I was able to accelerate because I did my homework.
At what point during this process of wanting to get healthy originally and like then taking it to stepping on stage, did you realize you need an expert, you need someone that has already done this before to help you? So when did you go and hire a coach?
I want to say like my second year, I kind of was messing around with somebody who was a trainer, but not really a coach. And I wasn't really paying this person. You know, when they say you get what you pay for.
Yep.
So I got what I paid for. Not the guidance that I needed to go to the next level. So I did my research and I hired Mike Robinson of Muscle Dog Fitness and a real coach. And I think as an amateur, I had the most wins with him. So it's like, okay, you got to spend the money. You have to invest if you really want a good high level coach to take you to that next level.
And you said that you started this originally because of some medical issues. How did those things resolve if they did because of this journey you went on?
Yeah, I had extremely high cholesterol, heredity, and I had my irritable bowel syndrome was so bad they thought I had Crohn's disease. Now, I was a runner. I was had a personal trainer. I was not overweight. I had a really great physique. I did, but my nutrition was terrible. I would drink like a 2 liter of Dr. Pepper and a pizza or a pack of hot dogs, seriously, and go to bed. Not enough sleep, the stress. And again, I look good on the outside, but the inside, I was in a terrible place. So I went to the doctor, and my doctor, I'll never forget, her name was Dr. Prada. She was from the Ukraine. She was so mean. She was the meanest lady. She was my doctor for about 3 years. You know why I liked her? Because she was always the same. She was always mean and straight to the point. So I liked her. So I go to the doctor, and I think by this point I had at least 4 colonoscopies at this point. They're trying to figure out what's wrong with me. And my doctor told me to consider being a vegetarian. I said no. No. I think I added salad, you know. Worked out even harder. You know how we do. I'm going to work it out, you know. Work out even harder. So I go to Dr. Prada. Dr. Prada is like, you know, you got to take this medication, right? So what do? I start crying. Like she did. So my lady told me, you know, right. Like she did something to me. I'm crying. I don't want to do that. She said, listen, I'm going to give you about 90 days. True story. And I want you to make another appointment. And if these numbers don't change, you got to take this medication. I said, okay. So 2 days later, it's nothing but the grace of God, I'm telling you. I go to the gym and my trainer had double booked himself. He said, Dee, I'm sorry. You see that little girl over there on the Smith machine? I said, yeah. I want you to go over there and work out with her today. I'm like, are you serious? I never forget, her name was Alyssa. Thank you, Alyssa. She was 22 years old. I was 42. And I walked my cocky, arrogant self over there. And I'm going to show her how to do legs. She broke me in about 10 minutes. I was going to cardiac arrest. But my pride kicked in. So I finished the workout. But, you know, I almost died. My gym almost died. So at the end of the workout, she says, Dee, you should consider being a bodybuilder. I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. Mm-mm. My ignorance and my perception of what bodybuilding was incorrect. I didn't know about the different divisions. I just thought like big women, which I have a lot of respect for now because I know what goes into the sport. I was ignorant. And I said, no, I want that. She just kept talking. You know, she's 22. She just kept on talking. I'm listening, being polite. You know, I'm listening. And then she said to me, I like it, but you do have to eat clean. And when she said that, my doctor had told me that to eat, you need to learn how to eat clean or be a vegetarian. You have to change your diet. I said, well, what does that mean exactly? So she kind of gave me a high definition of what that was. And the next day, I hired her coach. The next day, 92 days later, I stepped on stage for the first time and won my first bodybuilding competition. And that's how I got into bodybuilding.
Wow. Yep. I think the biggest message of what you just said was you looked great on the outside, but the inside was terrible. Like it's, and I think in your 20s, you get so caught up, your body's just constantly changing as you're getting older. And if you're not strength training with it, you're not treating it well, it's not going to be changing for the better. And then you have the people that have great genetics that just will naturally, they could eat whatever they want and nothing's going to change. They're not going to gain an ounce of fat. They're not going to look any different. And you go and see what they're doing on the outside of, oh, they're just working out really hard in the gym and then they can eat whatever they want. It's like, well, that's not the case. That's not the full picture for one, because no. You don't know the numbers that are going on the inside. You don't know how they're destroying themselves there. You also don't know if what the meal you're seeing them pig out on is their only meal of the day, because it very well could be. And you also don't know their history. You don't know what their genetics are. And it's, you get so caught up in, I just want to look like her, that you don't think of all the health that comes with it or the sacrifices in your health that could come with wanting to look like her, by doing what this other person is doing, by eating pizza and Dr. Pepper and hot dogs and then going to bed and waking up and training your butt off. It's like, that doesn't, if I did that, that would not work for me. I would not look good if I, because I know my genetics and I know my body and I eat very clean.
Yeah.
So I think that was just a really nice message of, you got into this, you started this journey because of your cholesterol, because your numbers were just not great and your habits also weren't great out in terms of, like, nutritionally speaking. And this shifted the way you relate to your nutrition and to your body and to your health overall.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I waited until the diagnosis, right? So you think that when you're young, that you can outrun all of this, but eventually, I'm telling you from experience, who've been pretty healthy my whole life, it's going to catch up to you. Nobody is immune.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to preach preventative care because now I've been diagnosed with this. Let me take action now. And it's like, well, sometimes it's too late. Sometimes it's irreversible. We don't want that to happen for you. Okay, so let's say a female or a male who's listening is like, you know, I've been working out for a while. I have a pretty good physique and I want to take things up a notch and train for a show. What is the first thing you're going to make sure they're doing or eating before they even go to sign up for a show? So before there's even something on their calendar, what should they do?
Yeah, the first thing I do ask about their nutrition. Like, do you eat? How many times a day do you eat? Are you skipping meals? Do you eat breakfast? Because what people don't understand is that the eating and eating constantly is very important. I do meet some females who want to body build, but they're afraid of food. They think they're going to get fat. I'm like, you're not, because you're going to be eating clean food and you're eating frequently to keep the metabolism going. So the first thing I have to find out is what kind of relationship they have with food, because that's 70% of the journey when you're trying to body build. So that's number one.
In terms of, you mentioned frequency and timing, why is that important? Like you say, it keeps the metabolism going, but can you break it down? Like, if I'm a kindergartner, why should this matter?
Yeah. So I explain it like this. Your body is like a car, right? And if you don't give it any fuel, it won't run. Your body is very smart. What it'll do is it'll slow itself down because you're not giving it enough nutrition or gas to go. So here you are training really hard, burning a lot of calories. So you have to make sure that you're not burning so many calories, you don't have enough fuel, that you'll start to actually lose muscle. So we'll start with the frequency of eating keeps the engine going. Because most people who bodybuild, they have a low body fat percentage. So they're not everybody, but it's a good place to start. Yeah. Your metabolism is a little bit higher. So we have to make sure we keep usually a surplus to make sure that we don't start to eat away at this beautiful lean muscle that you're building because the metabolism is up. Before you work out, you should eat carbs. Yes, not a protein shake. You can have some protein, but the carbs give you energy to work out. Because when you're training for a bodybuilding competition, you have to train with intensity. Now you're driving a race car, so you got to put the right kind of gas in it before you put it on the track. You need some carbs for that. Then after you work out, after you've broken down those muscle fibers and you've trained with intensity, you need protein. You still need carbs as well. You need both. And you want to try to do that, I tell my competitors, within less than an hour. You want to try to get that food in, you know, and then the myth of, you know, don't eat late at night. That's not true. It depends on how long you're up. It depends on how lean you are. I don't like to be real specific with food and real specific with timing because everybody's body is different and people work out at different times. I will say this, with bodybuilding, there is no breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We don't eat like that. It's meal 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and sometimes 6 or even 7, depending on how long your day is. So if my meal, my post meal is 200 grams of rice and 4 ounces of chicken, that's my meal number one because I work out at 6 in the morning. And I'll hear some people say, that's not breakfast. Well, what is breakfast? We have defined what breakfast is. No, breakfast is just food. It's just a carb, protein, and a fat. So you have to think like that as a bodybuilder. It's just meal one through whatever. And make sure you get those meals in and prep. Preferably, I eat every 3 hours. One of my meals is every 3.5 hours because of how long my day is. But I eat about every 3 hours.
I feel like I'm pretty much a bodybuilder because that's I eat every like 2.5 hours. And I'll have like a solid, like it's not, for me it is like I'll have pre-breakfast, breakfast, mid-morning snack, lunch, afternoon snack, dinner, and then maybe another evening snack. But like I do break it up like that. But in terms of the frequency of eating, I naturally do that. I was actually having a conversation with this with a client before of, she's not a bodybuilder. I am not a bodybuilder coach and want to preface that. But we were talking about the like how many meals to be eating or how often to eat during the day. And I was like, well, it's kind of personal preference. Like for me, I don't like the feeling of being full. I graze throughout the day. So I'll have smaller meals, but spread out through like 6 different times of eating. And if you're someone that doesn't like doing that or doesn't even have the time to be able to do that, then having bigger meals is going to be better for you. But again, that's not bodybuilding. Would you say there's a difference, or is it at the end of the day, it's how, like, are you hitting your macros when you're supposed to be, whether it's surplus or deficit? Are you hitting your calories? Like, does it get more nitty gritty than that? Like, should you be?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Bodybuilding is also about metabolism. So you have to remember, like, here is your fat and here's your muscle. As your muscle gets here, your metabolism is going up. You're going to be hungry more frequently as well. So you want to just keep eating. Like I said, every 2.5, every 3 hours, keeping that metabolism up too, especially as you're leaning out. Now, somebody who's here, here's your fat, and your fat goes like this. Does that mean that person can't eat frequently? Yeah, they can still eat frequently, like you said, based on their schedule. But this person has a little bit more leniency. Yeah, maybe they eat, take that those same calories and break them down into 4 meals. 3 meals, maybe not such a good idea, but I tell people the minimum is 4 meals. The thing you have to remember too is that your body can only consume so much food calories per meal. If your metabolism says 500 calories and you eat 7, you're overeating. And you know it's going to store it as store it later to be used as energy. Most of us don't. And then it turns into fat. I mean, that's just the basic definition. But it is different. You know, we're, again, let me give a good car. I almost say a Volkswagen. That's not good. So let's take a Kia. I like Kia. Kia's cool. Let's take a Kia and a Lamborghini. That's the comparison. This is, and when I say Lamborghini, this is a high octane engine, lean, sleek, and it requires a little bit more maintenance than somebody whose metabolism is not as high and doesn't have as much muscle. Is one better than the other? No, the needs are just different. They're just different.
I like that you say that. The needs are different. So it is for someone that is a Kia and wants to be a Lamborghini, how can they start? Is it through that meal timing that they can start to upgrade their metabolism, I guess you could say?
Yep, I like that. The first thing that I look at is a person's body fat percentage. So, you know, it's hard to put muscle on if your body fat percentage is too high. So the first thing I do is I kind of treat them like a weight management client to try to get some of that extra body fat off because it'll make it easier. So I start there. Let's work on body fat. Let's work on some healthy eating habits and training. Because most people, they have the training. They like to go to the gym. It's the nutrition that's hard. So I kind of have to put them on some training wheels first Let's get the fat off. Let's get into a routine of eating, and then we go from there.
Okay.
But let me also say this, that we just had this conversation on social media. Bodybuilding, if you go to the gym and you lift weights, you're very conscious about your body. I didn't say you're perfect. You're very conscious. For the most part, you eat better than most people. You are a bodybuilder. You are building a better body. That phrase is not limited to a small group of people.
I like the shift, because I haven't heard someone talk about it like that. And it is true. I mean, technically, I'm a bodybuilder. Am I a stage-ready bodybuilder? No, but that's also not part of my goals, as you and I talked about. For those of you listening, it becomes a kind of a dangerous game to play if you have a history of body dysmorphia or eating disorders. It's not as healthy because you have to be so hyper-focused on what you're eating and what you're doing all the time. Have you ever turned someone away if you know that they have this history, or how do you help them maybe even shift their perspective around this to be a more healthy alternative to taking care of themselves?
So yes and yes. So one of my competitors, she comes in the gym frequently. Her name is Danielle. She is so awesome. When I first met Danielle, she walked into the studio. Her body fat percentage was about 6%. And she was getting ready for a bodybuilding competition, and she had a terrible relationship with food. And I wasn't her coach at the time. I was just her training coach. I did not want to coach her. She was in a severe deficit. And that's not the mindset to be bodybuilding. Because really, 6% for a woman, that's too low. That's way too low. So some women...
Can you say what a healthy percentage is, just for the audience listening, so that they can gauge?
Oh, for a healthy woman, about 23 to 24%. Yep. That is a healthy, maintainable, realistic weight. So when you guys see me walking around getting ready for a show, I always tell people that's my fake body, that I don't look like that all year round. That's the fake D. That's not the real me. So Danielle, is now one of my clients, her body fat percentage now is about 17.
Okay.
And she's getting ready for her first bodybuilding competition. So I had to teach her that food was good. And to eat and fill out was good. That's not a bad thing. And I have met clients that I did not take them on because I knew they had an unhealthy relationship with food. I look at past pictures. I can see bones. I can see them running themselves down with cardio. And I'm like, no. Sometimes I have lied and said I was booked, or tell them, I had a woman not that too long ago, her goal was very unrealistic. And I told her I wasn't the coach for her. I didn't want to be responsible for that. But to go back what you said about body image, if you have a terrible relationship with food, this sport is not for you. The eating scares a lot of women. Men, they overeat. They go into this, I'm bulking, an excuse to overeat. But if you have, also another thing that I see is that when people lean out for a show, I get down to about 8% body fat. I can only stay in that state maybe 5 to 6 days. That's when we pull water. I can go into kidney failure, cardiac arrest. That's why you need a coach. But some people who have body image issues will try to hold on to that look for as long as they can, and they hurt themselves. And most women who do that, they end up with terrible hormonal issues. You mess your hormones up if you stay that low that long. So it's not good. So when we're done competing, you do have to do what's called reverse dieting. It's very important. What does that mean? It means we slowly start putting the carbs. I said carbs, I didn't say protein. We slowly start putting more carbs back into the person's diet. What happens to competitors that do not reverse diet? They either try to stay lean and mess their hormones and kidneys up, even their heart. Or remember when I said you're driving a Ferrari? Remember I said that? That Ferrari still wants to eat every 3 hours. And once you put that first piece of cake, those donuts and those cookies in your mouth, listen to what I'm saying. It becomes unstoppable. I had a client who gained 35 pounds in 1 week. That's how easy it is. And now we're not just talking about the weight. We're talking about the stress that she put on her heart, eating like that. So you have to reverse diet when you're done competing.
Yeah, I think it's important to know what you're saying of when the show ends, your journey doesn't end. You need
absolutely not.
When you like for anyone that's listening, if you're not going to hire D and you're looking at some other bodybuilding coach and they're like, "Yeah, as soon as your show's done, we're done." That's not a good bodybuilding coach. You need someone to one, just hold you accountable to make sure that you don't fall into that trap of opening Pandora's box, because that is what happens, is you fall down this really slippery slope, and that's when it gets dangerous. That's when you see people bounce back in a really bad way, and you're like, ooh, when you look at them. And it's more than just what's on the outside. It's messing up everything on the inside. But you did mention that you would reintroduce carbs. So I want to go back into the pre-show process, like the whole training leading up to it. Is there anything that you're making sure a client prioritizes either within their diets or within their training regimen throughout this entire process, including the reverse after?
Yeah, one thing that a lot of my clients sometimes forget, or any bodybuilder, even myself, is balance. Balance. If you become so consumed with the way you're going to look on stage, your cortisol levels go up, and it affects your sleep, and you will make very bad decisions with that obsession with throwing up food, taking too many steroids, taking diuretics. Every time you eat, you run it down with cardio. So you got to have balance. When I say balance, like, are you getting enough sleep? Are you going socializing with your friends? Eat before you go. You know you can't eat the food. That doesn't mean you can't still be with your friends. Are you spending time with your family? Are you taking a day off and not training at all, which is important too? So you need to have to make sure that my clients have that overall balance, because it'll also make you a good competitor if you're balanced. What was the other part? I'm sorry, the question you asked me, I apologize.
Just nutrition and training. Like, what should they keep in their regimen the entire time?
So the training, in the very beginning of the prep, I prep my clients for 20 weeks. When they get to 20 weeks, the body fat percentage has to be 20% or less. So as we start to approach competition date, the intensity of training changes. We go from heavy, and we start taking some of the heavy weights away, what they can handle, and it turns into high reps. And then the last week or two, it's more HIIT type training, because you're in a deficit. What that means is that we're pulling carbs, and some people pulling fats, depending on the person. You're not eating as much. I usually, the lowest I'll take my clients down to is about 1,400 calories. So you don't have as much energy. So as we start to pull the calories, we do have to change the training, or you're going to hurt yourself. The nutrition is everything. Everything has to be exactly measured to perfection. And the reason is those nutrition plans for coaches, those are our roadmaps. So we're watching your body, and this is the food I gave you. So when I get to the next plan to manipulate it, to get the body to change, and it doesn't, one of two things has happened. You didn't follow the plan. That's usually the case. You didn't follow the plan right, or your body didn't like something. But since I know what I'm feeding you, I can manipulate the fats, the carbs, or the protein to see what is it that your body likes. So if you're doing all a little cheating, a little fry here, a little Teddy Graham, a little piece of chocolate, it does matter. It affects the metabolism. So the nutrition has to be perfect. So you have to be a person who likes scheduling. You're very regimented. If you have an A-type personality like I do, and I'm dyslexic, and I have anxiety issues, bodybuilding is for you. Bodybuilding is for you. But yeah, that last 20 weeks, you want to prep everything depending on your goal. Now, if you want to be a winner, it has to be perfect.
Can you give any tips for meal prepping and staying on track with nutrition goals? This is for anyone, not just show people.
Yeah, yeah. For anyone, is most people eat poorly out of convenience, right? There's nothing available, so I'm going to eat whatever because you didn't prepare. Number two, why people eat poorly is that you wait to eat too long between meals. So you're so hungry, you're going to eat whatever is available. So the key to really staying on point with your nutrition is planning. Prep your meals. Know the night before what you're going to eat tomorrow. Or you're not that good. You're going to wing it and you're going to make bad decisions. Now, as far as meal prep, it doesn't have to be boring. It really doesn't. Chicken is a chicken is a chicken. When people tell me, I can't eat chicken every day. Yes, you do. You go to Chick-fil-A every day. That's chicken. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. So you can take the chicken and put different sauces on. Like sometimes I have curry. You know, sometimes I'll do barbecue. Jay Hughes's barbecue sauce is really good. Smoked paprika. I just fix my food. I flavor it differently, but it's still the same food. But here's what will happen too, is that when you start to really clean up your food and eat clean, it tastes different to you. Like, I don't want anything on my rice. I like my rice plain. I can actually taste sugar in rice because I eat so clean. If you put two glasses of water to my nose, I can tell you which one has chlorine in it and which one doesn't, because that's how clean my diet is. I can't walk into Kentucky Fried Chicken. I can't, because when I walk in there, the smell nauseates me. So I've cleaned up my body, and that's what will happen to you, where you'll start eating for nutrition, for life, and you'll see food a little bit differently, where food isn't life. Food is for life. And then your perspective will change and meal prep will become a priority. Make it fun by putting different things on it. Yep. And prepare. Yeah.
Yeah. As is exactly what I help my clients with, of just the beginning things. I mean, the session I had earlier this week was making sure we plan ahead. That was what the whole topic was. And also knowing that with planning ahead is not letting yourself get too hungry where you could eat anything in sight, because then that's when mistakes happen. And it really, we're all the same. It's not just for someone that wants to be so dialed in, but it's for anyone that just wants a healthy lifestyle. Like, yes, you can take it up a notch. You can take to the extremes. That's what we're talking about in terms of stepping on stage, but it still has the same underlying beginner level relationship to food and to your health and to the importance of all of it. And I want to add of one thing that you said a couple minutes ago about the lowest that you'll take your clients is 1400 calories, because the media, I fell into this trap in college. The media loves to say 1200 calories. That's what you should be eating. And it is awful. It is one of the biggest mental blocks to take someone out of like, no, you need more food. A toddler needs 1200 calories. You're a full grown adult. You need more food than that. So how do you help someone get past a road bump, like a mental block like that of, we've talked about like food can be scary and food can be hard and people aren't as hungry, so they're not going to eat. Like, there's so many reasons to not eat food and then to also eat food out of convenience where it's not going to be as good. So can you kind of break down how you help your clients change that relationship a little better?
Yeah, well, the best sermon is a good example, really. I always like to show, because we're visual people, right? So I like to show my clients people who are in their situation and what they look like. Now, I can talk till I'm blue in the face, But social media, like you said, what mainstream says about food, I like to show them examples. Like Danielle actually now works for me. And any client that I get who basically is anorexic, basically, I put them with her because she is experienced and she can tell them no food is good. Or some of them, one lady, I even challenge them. I'm like, I tell you what, this isn't working, right? So let's just try for 2 weeks. If you don't like it, I'll take you back where you were. I'll take you back. Or look where we are. It's like, is it working? So I try to show people, give them visuals so that they can see, because you can say whatever, but they need to see, this is what's happening. This is what could happen. This is what this person went through and they ate it and they were fine. And that's what I want. But women, yeah, it's like telling them to eat. The first thing they're going to say is, which I've even had one cry in my office, you're going to make me fat. I'm not going to make you fat. What is fat anyway, right? I mean, really. So I have women who are 10% body fat who tell me that they're fat. Like, you're not fat. Or a woman who's 20% body fat. That's not fat. So what we're defining as fat or overweight, it's wrong. It's wrong. Yeah, I didn't mean to say that, but I really hate what mainstream is doing as far as defining what is good weight and what is bad weight. 23% is not bad. It really isn't, considering that the average woman now is over 30% body fat. The average. My community, my women, Black women, make up 60% of the obese population. 60% means their body fat percentage is over 30. So if you're below 30% today, you're not in a bad place. I mean, you're not. So I'm going to say it out loud. For women, a healthy body fat percentage, it's about 22-23% body fat. That's healthy. If you're lower than that, that's okay. Like you said, it's genetics. You know, I hover around 17, a little below 20 all the time, but I have a very high metabolism. But, you know, at the end of the day, you also have to be happy with who you are and the skin that you're in and make sure that you're healthy. And it's not always about a number that determines if you're healthy or not.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100%. I think for people listening, I would err on the side of caution of like taking what Dee say, like take it with a grain of salt of being 30% or above in your 20s. Is also, it's just not great. We don't want you to be like it, because it's the average doesn't mean that's what's good. Doesn't mean that's what's healthy. Yeah. So don't take that of like, oh, well, I'm 32%. So D says I'm good. It's like, well, no, are you healthy? Like, let's look again, the bigger picture of things. And most of the time, if you are over 30% body fat, you're not going to be as healthy. That's just plain and simple. It's how it works. It's like there's other things going on within your system and your habits that we need to take a look at.
I want to also say that you can be 30, 40, 50% body fat and still be happy, successful, have a family, beautiful, and rich. But it doesn't change the fact that you are unhealthy. That's the thing. You're unhealthy. You're still all these other wonderful things, but health is wealth. It really is. Bad health can take all your wealth. Bad health can take your beauty. Bad health can sometimes take your friends. It can affect your fertility. So all these great things that you have can be taken away from you if you don't take care of yourself.
And it also goes in the other extreme, too, of bad health is in too low of body fat percentage for too long. It can take your fertility. Absolutely. It can take your looks. It can take hormones. Your happiness. It can take your friends. Like, it's, again, that balance that I promote to you guys time and time again, it applies to everything. Like, you need that for a happy and healthy life. Like, they go hand in hand, happy and healthy.
It's true.
All right, I want to jump into recovery and rest days, because I know I used to be someone, I've mentioned this on a past episode, that I would work out, I was a 7 day a week goer, no rest days, didn't believe in it, was afraid if I rested for one day I would get fat. Now I take about like 3 or 4 rest days in a 7 day span, so today is a rest day for me. How do you approach recovery and rest days in your training regimen or with your clients? Again, knowing that everyone's going to be a little different in how they respond. So I guess, like, what is a good rule of thumb that you go by when plugging in someone's rest or recovery day?
Okay, well, number one, I tell my competitors to listen to your body. If you are tired, you are tired. You're going to have a crappy workout or you might get hurt. Your body says stop. That means stop. I always thought the same thing, that more was better and that I would be a better athlete, but I wouldn't. I would be tired, cranky, mad at everybody, can't sleep. But the biggest thing was I couldn't understand why the scale wasn't moving and why my body wasn't changing, because I wasn't resting. I'm constantly going. So remember, when we work out, we're breaking down muscle fibers. If I don't stop, I'm not giving my body time to recover and repair itself. And also overtraining, I forgot what that term is called, where the muscle actually dies. You can actually kill the muscle and it poisons the system. Because one of my friends had it, I can't remember the name of it, but she worked out so much that the muscle died. But that's psychological sometimes too. When I'm working out, I'm chasing something, and the only way I can get this satisfaction is working out. This is how I get this perfect body, but you're not. You're actually hurting yourself. Now, me as an example, the last week before I get on stage, I don't work my legs for a week, sometimes 10 days. Because your body is full of so much inflammation and swollen and pumped full of blood. You got to give it time to come down. And when it does, and all the inflammation is out, boom, there's the striations, there's the definition, because I'm resting my body again and giving it a chance to repair, and I look better. And guess what? You mean I can rest and lose weight? Yes. I took a rest day. I get on the scale like, dang, I lost 2 pounds. You mean all I needed was some sleep? Yeah, you need some sleep. So when people ask me, do you fast, D? I say, yep, when I get 8 hours of sleep, I fast. Yes, and you do lose weight when you get sleep. You will lose weight.
Yeah, I mean, because it's a stressful response for your body. It's you need that time. Your brain needs that time. Your body needs that time to just do nothing and recover. That's what it's doing. It's not even just doing nothing. You're letting it relax and recover and repair itself. It's why I have like so many different episodes on why sleep is so important. It's like, and I tell people all the time, I had a conversation with a girl yesterday who was walking into the gym as I was walking out. And usually she comes a little earlier. And this was at like 7:15 p.m. because that was when my client was ending. She's walking in. I was like, you're here at a weird time. And she's like, yeah, I didn't do my cardio earlier, so I'm going to do it now. And I was like, you're going to ruin your sleep for tonight because you're like amping yourself up and telling your body it needs to be awake and alert. And then I like walked away. I was like, and I talked to the person running the front desk. And it's like, I just tell everyone how they're messing up their sleep all the time because it's so important.
Why do we do that? It's like we sacrifice sleep all the time. We don't get any sleep. I don't understand that. And that will absolutely affect you as a bodybuilder if you don't get enough sleep. It's so important. It's part of the regimen. Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any specific supplements that you recommend for bodybuilders and like for the general population as well? Like if there's like everyone should be taking this, and then also can you explain the benefits of each of the ones that you would recommend?
Yeah, I do. I'm just a few because everybody's different. I'll go through the basic ones. Is that when you bodybuild, you are really hammering on your body and you're in a deficit as you get closer to this day. So you need to take something like antioxidants. You need vitamin C to help boost your immune system, B12, a multivitamin, fish oil for your heart, I also take CoQ10 for my heart. I take elderberry, ashwagandha. Now, ashwagandha has been proven to help with muscle, but I take ashwagandha because you're bodybuilding, you're all over the place, you're scatterbrained. I'm starving, so my attitude is not quite what it needs to be. So the ashwagandha helps to like kind of mellow me out a little bit. A multivitamin. So those are the basic things that you should be taking. Now, anything other than like biotin, there's some other things out there, BCAAs, EAAs, but you should always consult with your doctor too. Because if you're like a bodybuilder and you have high blood pressure, because some do have blood pressure, maybe you're trying to beat it by eating clean, you shouldn't take pre-workout. Other multivitamins you shouldn't take if you have high blood pressure. You have high cholesterol, so make sure you consult your doctor first. But a lot of stuff you can just get in food. I don't take pre-workout. I just drink coffee, the caffeine. I don't do protein powder because 4 grams of chicken has more protein in it than a scoop of protein. So I try to get all the nutrients that I need from real food.
Yeah, I think it's also tough in today's day age. This gets like a little more on the controversial side. I don't even know if it would be controversial because it's true of our food doesn't carry the same quality of nutrients or even amount that it used to. So there are some things you need to supplement with. I would honestly recommend getting your blood tests done, like test your minerals, test everything and see where your levels are at. Because I know I had mine done like a year and a half ago or so, maybe 2 years ago at this point. And I was really low in magnesium, so I supplement with that. The general population is low in magnesium, and there's no harm in taking it. I was low in zinc, and so I need to take that. Like, there was just, like, certain things that it's like, okay, I'm not going to get zinc from my food in the amount that I need. My body could either process it too quickly or it was just deficient in it altogether. So that was more of a trial and error to see what was going on, but the magnesium I swear by. I take it before bed every night, helps me sleep. I wake up feeling great, and it was a game changer. I remember calling my mom and was like, "You're not gonna believe this, but I wake up and I feel awake." And I know how ridiculous that sounds, because what else would you be doing? But for so long, I was so deficient that I'd wake up and I'd feel so groggy and awful, and I just needed coffee right away, and now I don't, because the magnesium is doing its job.
Yeah, that's good, yeah.
I have 2 more questions for you. So what are some common misconceptions about female bodybuilding or nutrition or anything about being stage ready that you would like to debunk?
First, people think we eat wood, stubble, and hay. I do not. I eat chicken, beef. As I get closer to the stage, I don't eat chicken because I can't digest it as well. I eat rice, sweet potatoes, white rice, Ezekiel bread, oats. I eat a lot of stuff. So the difference is it's just cleaned up and we don't eat processed food. So that's misconception number one. Number two is that the nutrition is 70% of our success, not the gym. You do need to train with intensity, but you can train with intensity all you want. If the nutrition is not on point, your body is not going to get lean. You cannot get lean in 10 days. It is a slow, progressive process that has to be exact. And I tell my clients, I can get stage ready in about 15 weeks, but I stay ready so I don't have to get ready. So the longer you eat poorly, the longer it's going to take you to get down to the body fat percentage that you need to get to. So now let me get to female bodybuilders, because this was my ignorance when that young lady told me about it. There's different divisions. There's bikini. There's just smaller girls. It's the biggest bodybuilding division in the world. It's bikini. Yes, the most obtainable. You have women's fitness. These are like ex-gymnasts, dancers. That's another division. Yeah, that's another division. Then you have wellness. This is most women today who have smaller upper bodies, but big, beautiful hips. We call them horse legs, bigger legs, right? That's called wellness. I am a figure competitor. We have what's called an X frame, a little bit more muscular than bikini and wellness. Fitness looks a lot more like we do because they're gymnasts, they're very conditioned. Then you have women's physique. And people would think, well, they have more muscle. That's not true. What makes a woman's physique competitor is that the muscle bellies are rounder and fuller, not that they're bigger. Because you can stand me next to a physique competitor and I may be bigger than her in size, but her muscle bellies are more developed and round. And then you have the queens, female bodybuilders. Let me talk about that for a second because social media, pictures, and TV makes us look bigger than what we are. So when people meet me in person, they're like, you're Dee Jackson. I'm like, yeah, I thought you would be bigger. I know. The more striated and drier I get, it makes me look bigger than what I am. When I get down to a size 4, but when they take my pictures on stage, they make us look like these big, giant. No. Even female bodybuilders, when you meet them in person, they're just very muscular, but they're not that big. So let me talk about mainstream's perception of it, okay? Where some will say, that's not feminine. They look like men. I'm like, do I like a man to you? I don't. I'm there like a man. I think I'm kind of cute, actually. So all right. So I don't look like a man. I don't. Some women, I don't know. Then you have steroid use, right? And some of them will make you look steroids and make you look more masculine than others. Then we have transgenders who are in our sport. We do, because I believe bodybuilding is for everyone. I do. So, you know, then you have maybe women who are gay, right? And they tend to go more toward a masculine look than a feminine look. But who cares? At the end of the day, you have to be happy with yourself. So just say that a woman with that much muscle is not your preference. You know, so when I get, especially on TikTok, and I get all these guys, I'm like, man, like, no, you're just insecure. My husband thinks it's great. He does. So it's just a personal preference that you don't want a woman as muscular as I am. You know, but at the end of the day, because I thought that women's bodybuilding, I'm like, nah, I don't want to look like that. I don't want to look like that. But I respect what they do. I know how much work that is. And the first thing people want to say is, it's a steroid. I'm like, are you serious? If I could shoot myself up in the arm and look like that, wouldn't everybody do it? Like, it's ridiculous. The number one thing you need to be a successful bodybuilder, genetics. You have to be genetically, I know some of y'all don't want to hear this. If you want to go all the way to the top, the level that we compete on, it is genetics. I've had abs since I was 10 years old. Some people can sneeze and grow muscle. Others, it takes them a while. What separates our categories, all the categories that I just named, is genetics. Some girls can grow cap shoulders. Some cannot. Some have lats. Some don't. I love wellness legs. I wish I could get my legs that big. I cannot. Genetics says no. So genetics determines what class you're in and how successful you're going to be. Your body genetically has to love muscle to be a bodybuilder.
I love that. My follow-up question was going to be, is there anything else you want to add to this conversation that can provide value? I mean, you just gave so much and I learned a lot too. But so if there's just anything else that you're like, one more thing, and it could be in relation to anything that you want to add, the floor is yours to take away.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest thing in our industry right now is that the NPC, International Federation of Bodybuilders, has introduced a natural league. And this is all over the internet. We have like 50 natural shows. Now, not that we didn't have natural competitors. And do you have to use steroids to be a bodybuilder? No. It's like, do you need boobs? People ask, do you need fake boobs to be a bodybuilder? No, you don't. It's a personal preference. So I do feel like I have to address the issue because it's a taboo issue, and it shouldn't be. Because people should be able to freely talk about things, and that is why there's abuse of so many things, and because people don't want to talk. So let me just talk about it really, really quick. Is that, do you need steroids to be a bodybuilder? You do not. You do need to be genetically gifted. The level that you compete on, it's like if I told you that you don't have to practice for 100 hours, you know, to be a professional basketball player. You do. Same thing with bodybuilding. You have to train, put the work in to be a successful bodybuilder. Now, let me talk about when steroids come in. So when I decided I wanted to turn pro, my coach at the time told me, when in Rome, one must do as Romans do or move to another street. So as I tell my competitors, pick your league. Be careful. There's lots of leagues out there. If these people are doing steroids and you want to compete with them at that level, you might have to do the same thing. So a couple of years ago, I don't know what was going on, but remember all those bodybuilders kept passing away? Steroids is not what kills bodybuilders. It's the diuretics. That's what kills bodybuilders. Is that the, and you notice a lot of them pass away leading up to the stage. It is the diuretic. So what is that? That is people who don't trust the process, have body image issues, loves the competition more than the sport. So they make bad decisions. One example is a Lasix. So they take these diuretics that basically pull every drop of water out of your body to get hard. I've seen people pass out backstage, get cramps real bad on stage, and they go into kidney failure or cardiac arrest. It is the diuretics that's killing them, not the steroids. So they take too many steroids? Yes. Guess why? That's body image issues. Yeah, I'm trying to look, but I don't trust the process. And then you end up bloated or killing yourself because that's not how they work. That's not how, and I'm telling you from experience of somebody who has used them, that is not how it works. Or you're just a fat, overweight, not ready for the stage person shooting something in your body that you shouldn't be. Yeah. And I'll go even a step further. You should be genetically gifted. You can't make it happen. You can't shoot yourself up with steroids and say, I'm going to look like a bodybuilder. You're not.
All right. This was great. So thank you so much, Dee, for coming on the show. I loved everything that you had to say. I know I personally, when I think of bodybuilding, I think of like figure only and not knowing that there's all these different divisions that you can enter into. So that was fascinating alone amongst everything else that you said. So thank you for coming on.
All right. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Where can people find you if they want to get in contact with you or follow your journey, maybe like see you as you prep for your next show? Just how can people find you?
I think the best way is on Instagram. It's DJ's Fit Nation is DEEJS_FitNation. That's also my name on TikTok, but TikTok is more my teaching tool. Great workouts and things, but my personal journey, that's on my page. But it might be a minute as I get back on stage. I've been going hard for 10 years. I've competed 37 times. So yeah, so I'm just kind of like taking a break, and I had a really, really good year. I don't have anything to prove. So I'm just kind of chilling for a little bit and in teacher mode for now.
Yeah. And I know some people that are working with Dee. So if you guys need any additional way to contact her, just let me know and I'll get you guys connected. But her information will also be in the show notes for you to access. But otherwise, this concludes another episode of How To 20-something. If you liked what you heard, please share it with a friend or on social media. Tag me, tag Dee when you do. And as always, I can't wait to be in your headphones next week with another brand new episode.